Sir, I am immensely grateful to you for granting the Stockholm-based Ethiopian radio this interview, especially considering the short period of time between the time I contacted you and now. Thank you, sir.
Not at all. It involved lots of bucking me.
Now, let me go directly to my question. The first one is, you know, I have been reading your article on Fano, and we call him Skinder the Great.
Yep.
Sir, what made you believe that Fano and the Amhara struggle is a just cause and should be supported?
To be honest with you, I will be completely on. I'll be completely frank. I don't know that much about Eskinder. I know that he was in prison several times for simply being a journalist and acting on his profession. I don't know the man personally. I don't know his beliefs. It has more to do with the organization, and I'm comfortable with that because we shouldn't be following individuals in any kind of worshipful sort of, you know, adulation, because people are people, they're human beings. This gentleman shows great courage and great integrity, and that's fine. But what really attracted me was the fact of when this movement was started, and when there were even first rumblings of the movement, of course, people had the natural reaction of, oh, God, so now we're going to see another ethnic political movement. And the people that I was in contact with made it clear, no, that's not what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do is not just rescue the people in the Amhara region, but they have a grander and bigger scheme than that. They're bigger than that as individuals. They're bigger than that as a movement. They want to help save the rest of the country. They have a national agenda. And I spent a good portion of my time in between working on the latest book manuscript, going back and forth with Twitter, because some people I suspect are sincere, but others are probably agents of the government, going, oh, well, it's more tribalism, blah, blah, blah. And of course, that suits their agenda for the moment, for the exigency of the moment, to go, oh, it's tribalist, when they know damn well that the PP has become hopelessly tainted and hopelessly infected with ethnic agendas and tribalism. And I was looking to go, okay, who has the vision? Who has the vision to bring the country back so that every Ethiopian and every Ethiopian diaspora person can be an Ethiopian, where you're a citizen within your own country, where people are not like turning you away from trying to go to the capital, for God's sake, which is just makes me furious. And I looked at this organization. I spoke to two of the representatives from two different countries. I was in contact with them and went into my questions in great detail. And I'm satisfied that they are on the right side of this. So that affected my decision. People don't have to listen to me, I should add. I mean, the thing is, I live in Canada. I live at a safe distance. I don't have any investment in this beyond my own reputation and my own career, you know, but I haven't put my life on the line. I won't live there. But I'm told time and again, I have friends who come to me and say, please help, please help. And I don't like to turn down my friends. And in a, you know, in a somewhat self-serving way, I like to think that there are many thousands of Ethiopians who I could consider to be my friends. So I have to use my platform for some good. So that's how my decision was arrived at.
Jeff, you know, a person of your caliber, when he says something, people listen to him. That's why Ethiopians are keen to listen to your words. And your words means a hell lot to them. That's why they want to listen to you.
Yes,
and
but
by the way,
yes,
you have been
to
Ethiopia a couple of times, right?
Yes, but if I can interject, I have to be very clear and precise about this. The thing is, my opinions have evolved over time. And I've seen how, because I know we want to talk about this, and just to maybe I'm jumping the gun for your line of questioning, but the thing is, I have my opinions have evolved over time, and I realize that certain Western postures are the height of hypocrisy. And so, of course, when I studied Ethiopian history first for the sake of prevail, I tried to study as a historian, as a storyteller. But I couldn't help but feel sympathy for the people because it's a fantastic story. And when the war started, I wasn't there. So the TPLF nagged me to death, trying to enlist me to use me like a pawn. They said, "Why don't you talk about Tigray genocide? Why don't you talk about Tigray genocide?" And I said, "Because I don't know anything. And when I do know, I'll comment." And they, part of my language, they pissed me off because they started to harass me and try to intimidate me. And that does not go down well. And so I went, okay, I will look into things and I'll look into you. And after I dug into them, I discovered what they're all about. So I had to take the position, and I took the position based on the historical facts and the facts of the moment and the fact that they started the war. And of course, they lied about that to a tremendous amount later. And I started from the position of, okay, journalists should be allowed to roam free and do their job. I've gone so far since that because I've seen the Economist's correspondent lie and try to smear a professor. I've seen the New York Times glorify child soldiers. I've seen that these people can be a destructive force advocating an agenda for the US State Department and the EU players. And you go, okay, you're not doing journalism. You're acting as agents provocateurs. So the thing is, now I had to change my opinion on that. And then, of course, it was the media when they mentioned us at all, and they did a great job of trying to disguise my participation. I was only mentioned in maybe one or two stories because they were. Yeah, I really had them, I think, concerned because I was coming up with stuff, and God forbid I contradict their narrative. And of course, we were all acting on behalf of Ethiopia, and they tried to smear us as being part of the government. And I always said, time and again, you can find reference after reference. You can find reference after reference where I said, I don't have an opinion on Abiy. I can't have an opinion on Abiy. I don't vote. I don't live there. And besides, it was irrelevant. What mattered was we were trying to advocate to save the country from a terrorist force, an oligarchy, and a cult all at once bearing down, trying to destroy the nation. And then you go, okay. And then we come to the betrayal of Pretoria, where the guy who was supposed to be on our side, is busy watching soccer games with Biden and makes a little sweetheart deal with the TPLF, and we're back to status quo. And you look and go, okay, well, what the hell did all those people die for? What did those people get displaced for? What was the point of me walking through a field of TPLF dead, in Afar, and there were so many dead that they couldn't bury them. They had to cover them with rocks. And the others who were dead, the TPLF carted away and used in a mock, massacre incident that they manufactured later on. That's what they did. They collected the bodies to like dump them in a river again. And you go, okay, what was the point? So now the country's betrayed, and the massacres of Amhara still go on. And you go, okay, enough is enough.
So
And
Jeff, let me, the meeting in South Africa has it has just changed your idea about Abiy or the conference. It's a betrayal, you think so?
I do think so. And the thing is, as I mentioned to you last night privately, I'll say this story again. The warning signs were there. And because I didn't, my focus wasn't on him. I also consider, I think I'll extend an apology to the Ethiopian people right now on my own personal behalf. My own priority was the war. We knew massacres were happening. I've been monitoring the massacres since the summer of 2020. Other people have been monitoring massacres and incidents of ethnic cleansing far longer. There's, Sinai Sanae, who I'm sure some of your listeners know of. I'm holding in my hands,
I know him. I know her myself.
her,
I know her
Sanae.
myself, yeah.
The Amhara Holocaust, I'm holding a volume which was a gift from the author himself, Mulugan Tesfa, which looks, I haven't dug into it yet, but it looks like it's thoroughly well researched, and it had a whole board of editors look through it, but I'll dig into that another time. But I owe the Ethiopian people an apology because our focus was on the war. We saw the incidents of happening, and I had to go, okay, we got to get back to this. I didn't know enough about OLF and OLA. I still don't know enough, but I know what I can work with. And there were people like Jamal Countess, who did brilliant photography for his photo exhibition, Tears of Wallega, which I urge everyone to see. And here was the second war. And all of us went, okay, we got to get the TPLF out, and then we can deal with these guys. So then we get betrayed. And when I say we, I'm
Understand.
being a little generous to myself, but the thing
I
is, we were
understand. I
too.
understand. Everybody else understands when you say we are betrayed. You mean the Ethiopians are betrayed. Sir, taking into account what's going on in Ethiopia in general and the Amhara region in particular, what should Ethiopians in general and Amharas in particular do to support this struggle? What do you think they should do?
This is again difficult for me because again, you told me you're 66. I'm 60 years old. And on Twitter last night, I said if I was 10 years younger and in better physical health, for which I won't go into, I would be over there right now, and I would be doing the George Orwell thing, and I'd make a lousy, as I joked on Twitter as well, I'd make a lousy soldier. I make an even lousy car passenger. But I don't believe in urging people to pick up a weapon
But
and
there's another way
but
of fighting. There's another way of fighting.
yes, there is, and which I'll explain. The thing is what I'm put my point is you can't in good conscience urge people to pick up a gun while you're not putting yourself at risk. But this is bigger
True.
than this. This is bigger than my little, Hamlet-esque doubts. This is more important. And what people must do, what people can do, is they can do all that's possible within their comfort level and within their
Ability.
range, with all of their range of abilities. So the thing is, if you're not a fighter, and I can understand that, if you're not a fighter, you can give them sanctuary if they get caught behind an area where they need refuge. You can give them supplies of food. As I understand, I've been assured this, FANO does not attack civilian infrastructure. It doesn't go
No.
after civilians. So the thing
No.
is, and this is not only good guerrilla warfare, it's good common sense, and it proves the integrity of the movement to say, no, we're not trying to make people, we're not going to shrug our shoulders and say, oh, sorry, you're collateral damage. They're saying, no, we're trying to save the country, and it starts with the people there.
Exactly.
So the thing
Exactly.
is, but you can help. This could, and we're hoping, could reach the capital, and even when it reaches towns, your job can be to step out into the streets when it's safe and march in support of FANO, march in support of the Amhara Popular Front. Now, I'm not part of the organization, I can't speak for them, but the way I see it is FANO are the fighters and APF are now the intellectual political wing. So the thing is, you're marching essentially in support of their goals, and their goals are to bring Ethiopia back to common sense. You're not marching out for an army, you're
I
marching for
understand.
a political movement, and you
True,
can do it.
true,
And
true,
what's more,
true.
you can what's more from a resistance standpoint, if you've got access to the fertilizer, steal it, get it, smuggle it to who needs it. If you've got access to documents which can incriminate the government, find a way to photocopy them at low risk to yourself and sneak them out to the reporters and contacts like Ahmed Ali on his show. And we'll leak those. Embarrass them, embarrass the hell out of them. You know, support the church and if you're or your mosque, and enlist these people to say, you are the representatives of God or Allah on earth. Well, Jesus Christ, as I understand, and I'm an atheist, you know, did not say, well, let's let this guy kill other people. That's not turn the other cheek. Allah, you know, never had a jihad, never declared a jihad to his prophets and said, yeah, go kill your own people. The jihad was against the disbelievers and the people destroying things, you know. So the thing is, if you were of a religious bent, you know, your conscience, in line with your true religions, is telling you to be on the side of the people with compassion. And an act of civil disobedience is not passive. It's an active measure to help.
That was what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
Civil disobedience, the best thing. Sir, I've got 3 minutes and I have one question still to ask you.
Well, that went by very quickly.
That is, what do you think is the reason for the deafening silence of the West world, plight of the Amharas and the Ethiopians in general?
The fact of the matter is, it's complicated, but it's a good question. And the trouble is that the TPLF chummed the waters. They presented themselves as victims, and they did such a good job of selling themselves as victims to the Western mainstream media, and by default, of course, to the governing bodies of the U.S. government and the EU and the UN, which of course has Tedros in there. You know, we can't forget that. It's already infected. And the trouble is, I mean, I'm sitting at my feet. You can't see, but sitting at my feet are like almost knee height towers of source books, some I own, that supposedly the country was ruled by some Amhara Tigrayan elite, which is just crap. It's just such nonsense, because time and again, the country was ruled by people of mixed ancestry or different ancestry. You had a Oromo king, boy king, you know, fluent in Afam Oromo as his first language in the 1700s. You know, yeah, you had Ras Mikael, you know, who was pretty much de facto dictator, who was a Tigrayan. You know, Yohannes IV was from Tigray. This is nonsense. So the thing is, the TPLF have been incredibly successful, and others, some Western historians going back to the 1960s, have infected Ethiopian history to present as, oh, the Amhara were the rulers. And so, of course, this war happens. And besides the fact that it exhausts everyone, and they call it the Tigray War, even though, you know, I'm walking through, you know, action in what's going on in Desi and Wallo, and that ain't Tigray. You know, they convince it. And then Ukraine comes along, and scratch a liberal or conservative journalist or administrator in government, and you will always find a guy who goes, well, the white kids are dying. The white, blonde, blue-eyed kids are dying. Let's go there. So, of course, Ukraine gets all the attention. That worked. That helped to an extent in terms of relieving the constant, relentless lobbying on behalf of the TPLF, because Biden, true to form, like every American president says, I want Africa off my plate. And so they have the Pretoria Agreement. But now, of course, they're still massacring Amhara, and everybody goes, well, you know, we're done with that. We're done with that. We don't want to deal with that. And we want to care about the blonde, blue-eyed kids in Ukraine. And aren't the Amhara the guys who are always ruling the country anyway? So we have no friends in the West. We have no allies in the West, or not many. We have damn few. And so nobody's putting out the cause of saying, for God's sake, will you look at the photos? Will you look at the footage? Will you look at what happened in Walega? Will you go down to Denver for God's sake, and look at the Tears of Wallega exhibit, which is on now, there now. Will you look at the Tears of Wallega exhibit that was in Washington, D.C., and in Toronto, and so forth? You know, the evidence is there. They don't care. They just damn well don't care. And frankly, at this point, I think it always has come back to Ethiopians save themselves. Ethiopians save themselves when at Adwa, Ethiopians save themselves when the Patriots had to rise up and fight the occupation while the world moved on and cared about the Spanish Civil War. The Ethiopians had to save themselves when the Derg were there, and unfortunately they got their methods hijacked away from them from the TPLF. And now Ethiopians have to save themselves because the damn Western white world just doesn't give a shit, except for a few.
So, Jeff, you're telling us to stand by ourselves. We are the only who can save ourselves.
The strategy that I believe is, and as I understand it, you will have on as a guest Asfawosin Asarate, a gentleman I enormously respect. And he once told me in it when I interviewed him, he said, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's on a clip on YouTube. He said, you know, the Americans will just abandon their strongmen and dictators the minute they get into trouble. You know, they'll support them up to that. And then when they get into trouble, it's like, see ya. They abandon them.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so my strategy is, well, my own personal belief, the strategy is once the Amhara Popular Front and FANO are bearing down on the capital to the point where Abiy Ahmed has to get on a damn plane and flee the country, that's when the Americans will, hi, let's talk.
We know that. We know that. By the way, let me tell you one thing. Yeah. Next week on my radio show, I'm going to invite the Prince Dr. Asfawosin Asarate, yeah, the man you say you admire. I'm going to have him on my show. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I hope to have a further interview with you in the future.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.